go to therapy?
Yes. She may have like an entire like garage full of cars that I bought her at this point. And I don't care because it worked. When you find somebody good, it works.
Hi, I'm Maya Bialik and welcome to My Breakdown. This is the place where we break things down so you don't have to.
It's Maya Bialik's Breakdown. She's going to break it down for you. Because, you know, she knows a thing or two. And now she's going to break down. It's a breakdown. She's going to break it down.
Maya Bialik's Breakdown is supported by Green Chef.
Green Chef is a CCOF certified meal kit company, and they make eating well easy with plans to fit every lifestyle. Name a lifestyle.
Keto or paleo or vegan or vegetarian or my favorite, gluten-free.
Or maybe you're just looking to eat more balanced meals. Well, Green Chef offers a range of recipes to suit your preferences, so you never get bored. You know why I love Green Chef?
Why?
Because the meals are fun to make and they taste good. I mean, that's all you need. You need it to be fun to make and for it to taste good. Also, Green Chef is owned by HelloFresh now. With a wider array of meal plans to choose from, there's something for everyone. I like switching between the brands, and now our listeners can enjoy both brands at a discount. How do they do it, Jonathan?
Go to greenchef.com/breakdown130 and use code breakdown130 to get $130 off plus free shipping. That's greenchef.com/breakdown130 and use code breakdown130 to get $130 off plus free shipping.
Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well. You have to welcome back Jonathan Cohen. It's the return of the Jedi. I almost said return of the Sith, but I thought he might not like that. Return of the Jedi. Welcome back, Jedi Master. This is our first episode of 2022 back together.
Hello, Mayim. Hi, everyone. This is our first episode back together, reunited.
And it feels so good.
It sure does. You went off and did your own thing for a while. I was unavailable. And I appreciate you filling in for both of us.
I think you're kind of terminally unavailable, but that's a different story. Yeah, it is our first episode back togetherness, and we had a pretty big and exciting kind of holiday time for our podcast. We hit 50,000 followers. If you are not one of them on Instagram, please go ahead over to Bialik Breakdown. Join us. We've got some fun contests we do there. We're posting a lot more kind of personal stuff, like about our process, and it's a really fun thing to follow. We're still happy for people to subscribe if they haven't. Tell your friends about us. There are still some people who don't know that Mayim Bialik has a podcast all about mental health and wellness, and we think it's up to you, folks, to help people know about it.
Spread the word.
Spread the word.
Speaking of spreading the word, who are we talking to today?
We're going to be speaking to Julie Bowen. We're going to be talking about how you get from, you know, growing up in Baltimore to being two-time Emmy Award winner on one of the most successful television shows, really, in history, I think. Went for 11 years. Julie Bowen played Claire on Modern Family, and we're going to get to talk to her about her childhood, about being the middle of three girls, about kind of growing up in a very traditional household that also had some interesting features, and really about her anxiety journey that started in the early days of antidepressant prescriptions. And she shares in a very human, very, very human, very quirky, very funny way what her story is and what it's brought her to today. All right. Welcome back to me and Jonathan. And let us bring on Julie Bowen.
Break it down.
What does your mug say?
Mother effing work wife. This was from one of my, I have a bunch of women that work with me. I call them the wives. And this one says mother effing work wife.
I should get you that mug, Jonathan.
I'd like that mug.
Julie, take us back.
Sure.
Take us back in time. Where are you from? You know, what kind of house did you grow up in? What did your folks do? Yeah, tell us
deep.
A little bit about young Julie.
Well, I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland, actually. A town that gets a very bad rap for some reasons that I agree with and some I don't. Racial strife, X, not into it. But it's actually a very beautiful town, and it kind of feels like a small town where I grew up. And I grew up in Preppyville. Have you ever been to a golf course?
Yes.
That's where I grew up, like on a tee, essentially. Yes. With like, you know, everybody had nice houses and everything was low key because it's Baltimore, so it's not a super expensive city. So everybody could have, not everybody, but I was fortunate enough to live in an area where everybody sort of had nice houses and nice cars and we all went to independent schools and I was spoiled, 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 privileged from top to bottom.
Now, Baltimore is, it's outside of D.C., correct?
Yeah. It's 1 hour north of D.C., but if you really drill down, it's south of Mississippi in mentality in a lot of ways. And I do love Baltimore, and they've got like all these people working to really turn the beat around and get more progressive about Baltimore, and I am all for it. But it has had a kind of a very quiet drumbeat of racial tension for a long time.
Is The Wire Baltimore?
I was going to say, she did not grow up in the part of Baltimore that The Wire is in.
The Got Wire, it. The Corner, Homicide.
Got it.
Those are our three biggies. And actually, my dad, who still lives, has lived in Baltimore, and his family's been there for generations, and he loves the place. Like, he reminisces about the days when you would go to here and there and hang out and, like, eat Alonzo's pizza and all this stuff. And he's working. He called me the other day and said, I want to make a movie. He's a commercial real estate guy. I want to make a movie about Baltimore, but the good stuff, the good stuff. And it was because it chaps people's hides who live in Baltimore that it's like The Wire, The Corner, and Homicide. Because we do have some solid crime, but it might be time to, oh, and also Serial the podcast.
Yes.
Right outside Baltimore, hon.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you get his elevator pitch for what the good stuff would be in the movie? Like, who's the antagonist in the good stuff movie of Baltimore?
I love my dad. I love you, Dad. Great guy. Not an elevator pitcher. We had about a 25-minute conversation at the end of which I was like, I don't know what you're saying. I think there's a lot of like small, like feel good stories that come out of Baltimore. It's still like a mom and pop kind of a place. And instead of that being sort of like a badge of shame, that it should be something that really celebrated. And I agree with him on that one. I absolutely do agree.
So your dad was in real estate. Tell us a little bit more about your kind of home life, siblings. What'd your mom do? Was your dad in real estate then?
My dad was a head of a loan department at a very small bank back before Bank of America and like Citibank owned everything. There used to be local banks. It's really weird. I tried to describe this to my children. They were like, I don't get it. it would be a bank and only maybe they had one or two buildings and that was it. And the whole time they're like, how did you use an ATM? And I'm like, they didn't have them either. They didn't have them. But my dad was a loan officer at a very small bank in Baltimore, and people would come in and pitch him awesome ideas for like why they wanted a loan. Mm-hmm. And these people would come in and pitch these commercial real estate propositions, and he was like, damn, that's where the money is. I'm out of here. So he paired up with one of these guys, Mark Shapiro, and they've been partners ever since on a handshake. And it's like serious man love. And now but my dad had three daughters. So none of us were, I think I was sort of the boy. And I think if you gave is there truth serum? Does that exist?
I think so.
Because my dad was forced to tell the truth. I think he would say that I was sort of the boy of the family insofar as him wanting to kind of have me go into the family business in the traditional sense. And he's a traditional guy. And I said, I'm going to L.A. and I'm going to be an actress. But they're still there and they still love it.
And your mom, was she an at-home mom or?
Oh, my mom was the 70s rolled in the 60s with just a little whipped cream topping of the 80s. She'd come home from school and she would be smoking her Carlton 100s with a three-way tanner. You know, the like, I'm making it with my hands because this is a visual medium podcast. And she, you know, with like basically like Johnson's baby oil on her face, making sure you get the tan all the way around. And just smoking it down in a bikini, maybe doing some yard work. She was very salt of the earth, they're both married and both alive. And salt of the earth Midwesterner who had moved to Baltimore to be with my dad. And she was a full-time mom of three.
What's your birth order?
Fucked upness.
The middle child?
That's right! Bam, I went a high five you. Yeah. With three girls, too, it's like, it's that, that is common. Birth order does matter. It really does. I mean, we always say that my oldest sister, who's phenomenal and talented, she's an interior designer, funny, life of the party, but closest to the bomb blast. And so you do absorb more of the blast. And that, that is her story to tell. And then my youngest sister is a, an infectious disease doctor, clearly brilliant and kind of less concerned with, it doesn't get as hung up on like family drama because she was furthest from the bomb blast. And I was sort of next to, next in line.
And so being the middle, was were you, I know we don't use the term tomboy, but just speaking kind of how you did about.
We do, though. We do. I mean, if you gave me a choice at age 10, 11, 12, like early, before puberty and early onset, they'd be like, do you want to be the skirt or do you want to be the pants? and they said, or do you want to just be neither? I would have gone pants or neither. No one gave me a choice. I think I would have definitely been one of those kids that was like, yeah, I don't really, because I didn't feel like I, like Mary Poppins, the nipped waists, bras, like all the accoutrement being a girl, I was like, not into it. So yeah, the term tomboy fit me very well.
And when did you find theater?
Well, again, my very salt of the earth Midwestern mother, God bless her, God bless the benign neglect, would send us out, and like she even had, she had a triangle that she would ring. Like suddenly we were in Texas. It was go outside. Yep. There was no watching TV. You could watch TV on the weekends. There was nothing on. Mm-hmm. Or except that weird Sunday morning cartoon. I guarantee none of you ever saw it. It was like a biblical cartoon on Sunday mornings about David and Goliath. And Goliath is the dog who asks probing questions like, Davey, why did Jesus die on the cross? And we were so desperate for our TV time, so desperate that we would watch this. We're like, it's awful and I hate it, but I'm watching TV. So she would throw us out in the yard and say, and out with the neighbor kids and say, come back when you hear the triangle. And we were mostly girls in this neighborhood. There are a couple boys, not many. And they were, if they had something to say, we weren't listening. So we would put on plays. And that's where it all started. That was how we entertained ourselves. We'd write elaborate plays and put them on. And we would take the littlest sister and dress her up in slutty clothes because that's what we did. And she was the cigarette girl. It's a different time.
So do you come from a funny household? Like, was it clear, like, oh, we're all kind of quirky and funny? Because, look, plenty of kids do plays in the yard and blah, blah, blah. But, like, you obviously had something different, more, that kind of you pursued.
You mean like a damaged ego? I think that there's that sense. Okay. Did either of you go through that phase when you were a kid where you were sure that everybody could read your mind? And you were the only one who didn't know.
Jonathan is still in that phase.
I can hear her thoughts before she says them.
But do you know that kind of paranoid feeling that preteens kind of get, like, or that I went to a school with uniforms. Okay, so you could wear this dress, or you could wear a skirt, or you could wear pants, and you would think it would be the easiest thing in the world. Every day there's going to be one third. But there would be these days where you'd show up at school and felt like everyone had called each other the night before. They were like, it's pants. Do not tell Julie, whatever you do. She's going to show up in the dress. She's going to look like a fucking idiot. Mm. And I would show up and I was like, that sense of, oh God, I am an outlier. I think I didn't grow out of it. Mm. And I think I leaned into it instead because I never felt, I remember consciously feeling like, can they read my mind? Do they talk to each other and they don't talk to me? And then I ended up sort of attaching to that sense of outsiderness and feeling like that works for me. I think I'm going to run with that. And I never really leaned into what all the other sort of options were supposed to be. I guess full-time mom or lawyer or, you know,
infectious disease specialist.
Yeah. She clearly had her shit together, and I was busy being like, can they read my mind?
My MBLX Breakdown is supported by BetterHelp Online Therapy.
We love talking about BetterHelp. And this month, we're going to be talking about some of the stigmas surrounding mental health. Some people think that you have to wait until things are like really, 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 really bad, and then it's time to go to therapy. But that's actually not true. Therapy is a tool that you use before things get worse, and therapy can help you not have things get that bad in the first place. Therapy has changed my life. I know I wouldn't be here in a lot of ways without therapy. You wouldn't either, but that's a different story. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you're not ready. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Give it a try. See what a huge difference therapy can make in your life. See why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp Online Therapy. And our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/break.
That's betterhelp.com/break. My MBLX Breakdown is supported by Byju's Future School.
As parents, there's nothing we care about more than making sure our kids have all of the support and the opportunity they need in order to learn and thrive. And even in the best schools, your child isn't getting the one-on-one teaching that can be really helpful for helping them reach their full potential. But at Byju's Future School, students can get personalized attention and a world-class learning experience totally online to supplement their in-person school education. We love talking about Byju because not only is it designed to help your children learn, it is done in a way that is fun and interactive, and that's the best way for, I mean, for adults to learn, but especially for kids. Join the millions of parents accelerating their kids' learning today. Right now, Byju's Future School is offering our listeners their first class free. Just go to byju's.com/podcast to sign up for your first class absolutely free. That's byju's.com/podcast. You know, you're welcome to get as much or as little into this as you'd like. What was the kind of bomb blast that was your parents? You know, were they in their own world? Was there neurosis? You know, what kind of was it?
I think there was a casual, I'm trying to think of what I can say and that I would be okay with them hearing, which is we've had all these battles, positive and negative, our dinner table, and we all had dinner together every night, like every night. And it would get loud. In a good way and in like hash it out ways. But we always had dinner together. And a lot of times I do let my dad off the hook by saying, hey, man, he definitely grew up hearing, seeing, and my mother too, this very traditional, old fashioned ideal of women do this, men do that. And that crossed, went well past professions and gender sort of roles into sort of gender roles as far as emotions, like women are hysterical, men are the keepers of the calm and the cool, and boys will be boys. Let's just say it got a little dark around the Brett Kavanaugh hearings.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's all you need to know. And we moved on from that. And we decided never to discuss it again. So that, when I say close to the bomb blast, I mean, I think that as the eldest, and it is her story to tell, not mine, but I can say, I think Molly felt, that's my older sister, a need to navigate those waters and make sense of them, where I came along and was like, oh, you can't make sense of that. And Annie was like, what water? I'm fine.
You had an Annie and a Molly in the same house? Like from Annie? That was her friend in Annie, was Molly.
I know. Sarah Hyland played Molly on Broadway, or no, in the movie. But by the way, ma'am, like you might appreciate this because, wait, what's your whole long name?
Mayim,
sorry. Mayim.
It's okay.
Mayim what?
Bialik.
But middle name.
Oh, Hoya.
What the F?
Sorry.
Fuck me. Okay. Did you ever wish you had a nickname?
Or a normal name?
Well, like something like,
yes.
Okay. So our names are not, and none of our names are Molly, Julie, or Annie.
Right.
Our names are Mary.
No.
Julia.
No.
And Anne.
What?
Yes. You don't understand. And now in the days, it was all fine right up to 9/11 when like suddenly your license had to match, your SAG
right.
card had to match. I have 10 names.
You're a Julia?
My name is Julia. My birth name was Julia Bowen Lutkemeyer.
What?
And then I got married And at that point, I was working, and everybody knew me as Julie Bowen. So I didn't dump Bowen. So now I'm legally Julia Bowen Phillips on all my like legal schmeagle stuff, but I still pay SAG as Julie Bowen, and it gets very confusing.
Sorry, can we do Lutemeyer?
Lute, like a flute?
Lutemeyer. What kind of name is this?
It's German.
I was going to say the Meyer is German. What a beautiful name, though.
Little Commoner.
Okay, yep. Sorry. I digress.
Just about your name, though. Because that's, I think, the first time we've said your full name in 60-plus
episodes. Mayim Hoya?
Yeah, it's actually Chaya.
Chaya. But Mayim Chaya? What would that nickname be? So, I mean, it could be like...
My. I was My. And some people, like, my friend Brian Dorfman called me Mai Tai. Mm. My mother called me Mai Mai. Mm. There's not great nicknames.
Let's get back to.
What were you like in high school? Were you already like, I'm going to be an actor, and when I get out of here, I'm going to Hollywood?
When do you say to your dad, I'm not going into the family business?
I'm not going into commercial real estate. I hate it when actors say this, and especially people, I'm wearing 400. I just did Ellen, and I'm wearing 5,000 pounds of makeup and hair. Like, I've got all this, like, you know, like a pony gave its hair to me today. And I hate it when people are all like glammed up and they're like, I was a nerd, but I was a nerd. I was, it was. I studied a lot. I was like, I got this. I always liked having a path, you know, like you do this and you get an A. And I was like, done. And I got all of my self-esteem from getting A's. And it wasn't until, and I always did the acting in the backyard and acting in the school plays. And then I was like, you know what? I can do this. I was in seventh grade and I auditioned for the high school play, was probably mean nothing to anybody here, Go Ask Alice, which was a cautionary tale about doing drugs. And there was only one role for a younger person in it, the younger sister. And I was like, I'm going to get that. And I did. And I was like, you only need a couple bites at that apple when you're like, I can do this. Mm. And in college, some indie film came through town. I went to Brown, and it was a period piece. And I was like, I get this. And I did. And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna take a swing at this. But I did give myself a time limit. I gave myself I said, if I'm still struggling and can't pay my bills by 25 from acting, then I'm out. And I made the cutoff, I think, by about a year.
Wow. I mean, I know so many people who come out here around that age and they are not able to pay their bills, but they keep at it.
And I have so much respect for them. But also, Mayim, you've been doing this for a million years. Like, if you had known how hard it is, you wouldn't have done it. Like, if you have to be a little dumb to do it. A little naive.
Well, I mean, and I think, you know, what you said, you know, there's a tremendous amount of, I don't mean ego in terms of like thinking that I'm the most amazing person and I'm the only one who can do this, but there is something that gets satisfied from this dance that we do. And it's the rejection dance and then the finally conquering something dance. And then, it goes from small parts to bigger parts. And then you get a series of opportunities that lead to something like Modern Family, you know, one of the most prestigious and critically and publicly and popularly acclaimed shows in television history. Like, that's where sometimes it goes to, you know.
And then sometimes it doesn't. Like,
right.
I know my sister, Molly, again, she was the actress, you know, and families get roles. I mean, the family members get roles. I was supposed to be the artist. I'm not a good artist at all. Molly was the actress and Annie was the doctor. I guess Annie got it right. And Molly was and is a phenomenal actress. But the dance, she could not do that dance. And rejection hurt her. And I think you have to be a little dead. You have to be a little needy and dead inside at the same time to feed off of that. Dance,
absolutely.
That energy.
I mean, if it were a relationship, you'd say it was a sickness.
It 100%. I totally agree with that.
So what was your kind of, what was for you being able to sort of pay bills? Did you do commercials? Like, where did you start when you were, you know, around 25? What did that look like?
Well, I moved to New York right after Brown, and again, this was 4 million years ago, so it was kind of a big deal to have any tape on yourself. Like, you mm-hmm. wasn't like, you know, not everybody had a camera in their pocket. So I'd done this indie film, black and white period film in college, and so I thought, I'm gonna take this. I knew someone who had dated this woman who was an agent, and she said, I'll take a look at it, and they took me on. So I was like, okay, I'm getting closer. And then I started going out for commercials, and I can't remember. I think I started doing the under fives on soaps, which was like a category of payment, which is like they would pay you $1,500 a week if you would go in and you would never have more than five lines in the episode. And it was like somewhere between background and actually and mm-hmm. like principal. And I was like, $1,500. That is paying all my bills.
Right.
So that's where I started. And that gave me the confidence to sort of just keep marching on.
And I don't know if you like to talk about your age, but from 25 until Modern Family, how many years was that of kind of the other work you did before you got Modern Family?
I was 39 when I got Modern Family.
Wow.
And I did lots of stuff. I did lots of stuff. And, you know, you do a lot of guests, guests on Class of 96. I remember that. I think that was my first guest star. Class of 96 was like, by the way, came and went. Nobody remembers it, but I do, because to me it was like so meaningful. They flew me to Toronto first class. And I'm like, what? And I flew back and had to, and then they'd send me in a town car back into New York City, and I had to get back in my waitressing uniform, and they'd drop me at the restaurant for my shift. And I was like, well, you know, okay, it's a little bit closer. I'd never flown first class in my life, because yay, though, I grew up with enormous privilege, and I know it. My parents were like, man, you don't fly first class, and just chill, just slow your roll.
So when you got Modern Family, which obviously went for many years and, you know, many nominations and several wins, one when I was also trying to win, when you got kind of that level of fame, I'm kind of curious, like, how that impacted both your sort of sense of self and then also kind of how that rippled out, meaning, you know, many actors, you know, you keep at a certain level and you're paying bills and you're living life as an actor and you get a job here and there. But when you get on a show like that is, that's your steady work. I mean, that is being consistently, it's being consistently employed. It's job security that many people don't get in acting, much less anywhere else. How did that shift for you? Like, did you feel like, wow, I just became a different, you know, kind of person?
I was fortunate enough to have been sort of chugging along for a while. And when I was living in New York in the late 90s, I was doing a show called Ed mm-hmm. For 4 years. And there wasn't a lot going on in New York at the time. So we would get the invites to all the parties, all the New York parties. And like, we're mixing and mingling with like the Sopranos stars. We had no business being there because we were this little show. But so I had a little taste of what it was like to have like someone take your picture on the street or recognize you, and I did not care for it. It made me panic, and a lot. Like, I would full body sweat, like I'd done something wrong. So I had a chance to sort of adapt in a very small way. I was like, okay, just breathe. You haven't done something wrong. You know, you don't have toilet paper sticking out of your underwear. And so by the time I got into, then I did, I'd done a bunch of pilots. I did Boston Legal for a while. I did some movies, but it's still like a slow, calm chug along. And then, yes, Modern Family was huge. But I, at the same time, the exact same time, the day the pilot was picked up, I gave birth to twins. So I went from having one kid to three kids to having a full-time job on a very successful show all in one day. And guess, I mean, you have kids. You mm-hmm. know which one takes priority. So it wasn't. My life changed enormously, but not because people were like waiting in the bushes to take my picture when I went running. it changed enormously because I got zero sleep, felt guilty all the time, loved going to work so much, took the long way home some days. Was like, I think I'm going to go get stuck in traffic because three babies is a lot. And it was really nice to go somewhere where people brought you a coffee and you got to make jokes. But we had famously short days, really fantastic hours. So I took the long way home and really struggled with like my sense of identity as far as, oh my God, I should be a full-time mom. These kids need a full-time mom. But then again, they are reaping the benefits now, and they grew up with me having one job for 11 years.
Wow.
And that's, yeah. Well, how long were you on Big Bang?
So, yeah, when I started on Big Bang, I had an 18-month-old mm-hmm. and, you know, a three-year-old. I mean, I was pumping, you know, I was a long-term breastfeeder, so I pumped for years, you know, and that was my life, was constantly feeling tethered. And yes, you know, people would say, like, do men feel guilty all the time when they go to work? Like, there's something about, right. I was very, very torn. Very, very confusing times. And also, you know, when Big Bang ended, I was on for 9 years. So I then had basically a 10-year-old and an almost bar mitzvah boy. And I got divorced during the time I was on Big Bang. I got divorced when my kids were 4 and 7. So, you know, I had 9 years on a show where, you know, I was still learning how to be a mom. You know, honestly, like I had literally just finished my doctorate, cranked out this baby, like was not planning on being back at work. I thought I'll do, you know, a couple shows, get my SAG insurance back. I didn't know I was going to be a regular on a TV show with a nursing infant, essentially, toddler, I guess at that point. My parents were not Midwesterners or from Baltimore, but I come from a very traditional, very gendered structure of family. So the notion of me being like out of the house, working, breadwinner, like those were very foreign things mm-hmm. to me, to my whole structure. You know, when I met my now ex-husband, we were both grad students. Like I was not an actor.
My MBLX Breakdown is supported by Nutrafol.
I am among the 30 million women who are impacted by weakened or thinning hair. And if you are one of us, please know you're not alone. And there is a solution that you can trust to deliver results. Thousands of women have taken back control of their hair with Nutrafol. Many say the supplement doesn't only transform their hair, it restores their confidence, which makes total sense. Nutrafol has two targeted formulas for women that are clinically shown to improve hair growth and thickness with less shedding through all stages of life. Healthier hair growth takes time, right, Jonathan?
Sure does.
You'll begin to experience thicker, stronger, faster growing hair in 3 to 6 months. You can grow thicker, healthier hair and support our show by going to Nutrafol.com and entering the promo code BREAK to save $15 off your first month subscription. This is their best offer anywhere. It's only available to U.S. customers for a limited time. Plus, you get free shipping on every order. Get $15 off at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code BREAK.
My MBLX Breakdown is supported by Ritual.
Jonathan, what do I always say?
Go to therapy.
Gaps in your diet shouldn't be ignored. Over 97% of women aged 19 to 50 are not getting enough vitamin D from their diet. Vitamin D is incredibly important. 95% are not getting their recommended daily intake of key omega-3s, also so important. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin was formulated by exhaustive research to help fill nutrient gaps in the diets of women ages 18 and over. It's formulated with nutrients to help support brain health, bone health, blood health, and provide antioxidant support. They have traceable and vegan-friendly ingredients and always clear communication, no shady stuff. Do you want to start your day off on the right foot? I do. That's why we support Ritual. Right now, Ritual is offering our listeners 10% off your first 3 months. Visit ritual.com/breakdown and turn healthy habits into a ritual.
That's 10% off at ritual.com/breakdown.
I also know you were married. I mean, I was married almost 10 years and you were married also, you know, around a decade-ish. So that's also, you know, it's an enormous thing to undergo, especially when people get to know about it, you know, publicly. My kids are now 16 and 13. And yeah, it's very interesting still working. It's interesting also being on a show after Big Bang that is not a, quote, smooth running machine that's been going for so many years that we have short days. So my life is, yeah, it's very, very different. And yeah, being a parent, it goes with you everywhere.
It does. And I wonder, have you seen Maggie Gyllenhaal's movie, The Lost Daughter?
I've been told I need to be in a very non-vulnerable, stable place. And I said, then I probably will never see it.
I have to say, I don't know why. I too resisted it because I was like, oh boy, I've tried to read Elena Ferrante so many times. And I'm like, I can't. I tried the audio. I'm like, Annie, the doctor sister, she read it. She read all of them and we like can sit there and talk fluently about them. And I'm like, it's just, there's something I can't connect to. And I had a COVID exposure about 10 days ago and had to have 5 days alone to make sure that I wasn't spreading anything. And I watched everything. And so I watched The Lost Daughter and I was like half, you know, while folding laundry, like I'm not going to watch. It's so fucking good. And to talk about the ambivalence of motherhood and how it owns you, whether you own it and, you know, you can try to push back away from it. And you can go to work and tell yourself men go to work every day and it's fine. And it just, it's a worm that's in you. From the minute you give birth to those kids, they just own this part of you. And watch somebody struggle with that on screen, as good as Olivia Colman and Jesse, whoever plays the younger version of her, it's fucking wow. And made me really appreciate that somebody was telling this story. But it is, it's not easy to watch.
Yeah. Well, it's not easy to live either. Do you have a sort of things that keep you sort of sane, grounded? Are you an exercise person? Are you a meditation person? Are you a shopping person? Like, what's your...
I am an exercise person, but not classes and not groups and not loud music and not a club. I definitely am like a solo exercise person. That definitely keeps me sane. Prozac does a lot to keep me sane.
How long has that been helping?
Since I was 19 when it first came out.
Yeah, you were one of the beta testers.
I was really first round. I was like, sign me up.
How did you find it? Was there therapy back then?
I had enormous anxiety as a teenager, and I saw this therapist and nothing. It was a nothing burger. And then somebody put me in touch, my mother, I'm sure, put me in touch with this guy at Johns Hopkins named Ray DiPaolo, who was doing this groundbreaking work with these new psych meds. And I was like, no, lithium or thallium or whatever those, like Thorazine. I was like, no, I'm not. They make you slow and doughy and, you know. And I remember sitting in his office and him drawing this line and saying, this is normal. So drawing sort of this wave, like up and down, going, this is what a normal person's brain does. It goes high, it goes above the line, it goes below the line. And he says, you think you're doing fine. You are going up and down, but you never get above the line. Your brain never gets above the line. And he said, I'm not asking you, because I was like, you're going to flatten me out. You're going to turn me into a zombie. And he said, no, I'm just going to shove everything up so that you're just normal. You're just going above and below the line like every other motherfucker out there. He didn't use that term. He's a very nice man. And he's like, you just have to promise to give me 8 weeks.
Wow.
And I remember somewhere around, I was dating some guy and the sun rose and set for him and he was everything, but he was kind of a mean motherfucker. And I remember one day being in his apartment and he insulted something of mine. I think it was a jacket or something. He said I looked stupid. I don't remember what he said. It was something rude. And I ordinarily was sort of taken like in the gut. And instead I was like, I just looked at him. I started laughing and I couldn't stop laughing. He goes, what is wrong with you? And I said, nothing, nothing. And I was like, oh, this shit is working. I was still, you know, I was going above and below the line just like a normal person. I wasn't suddenly like manic and crazy. I just realized I didn't have to have a thought and let it go around the toilet bowl like 15 times. I can now just let it circle once and flush.
Wow. So have you been on the same medication then?
Yeah, I tried to go off for babies. I did. I tried to go off getting pregnant, and I went to many doctors, and there was a specialist at UCLA who was like, yeah, don't do that. That's stupid. You can go down if you're really concerned. And I was like, what about breastfeeding? It's really important to me to breastfeed and stuff. Like, it does not enter the breast compartment. It isn't in the milk. And I was like, when my kid fails third grade, I'm coming to you. And like, and I did go down, but in some sort of like, oh, this will help. Like, mm-hmm. The reality is Prozac did not affect my pregnancies or my mm-hmm. children or my breastfeeding. And anybody has a different opinion. I kind of don't want to hear it. Too bad, how sad.
Wow. That's my new mantra.
Yeah, that is a good
mantra.
We'll
see how that goes over.
No, I just was like, I found the doctors there. I definitely did see one pediatrician who I said, listen, I'm on Prozac and I'm going to have this baby with my first and I want to breastfeed. And she said, I cannot have you as a patient if you are on Prozac. And I said, huh. And I went and found someone else. And I didn't go, I didn't go doctor shopping to the end of the earth to find somebody who was like, well, on the full moon, if you light right. your asshole on fire. You know, like I wasn't listening to woo-woo crazy. I went to a bunch of different doctors. She was the only one who said no. And ordinarily in my life, like in relationships, I will listen to the one person who's mean. I'm like,
yes,
you must know something real.
Right.
You know the truth because you're mean.
What is that? I have that.
Yeah.
Is there a pill to make that go away?
I don't know. All I know is for some reason I had the wherewithal not to listen to that one woman and to listen to 10 other doctors and a specialist at UCLA and blah, blah, blah. He was a specialist in prenatal depression and anxiety.
Right.
Pre and postnatal.
Do you go to therapy?
Yes.
How long have you been in therapy?
I started going to therapy as a teenager. Started and stopped. We had some really great moments, like the Ray DiPaolo of it all. Ray DiPaolo at Johns Hopkins, God bless him. And some ineffectual therapy, some therapists that I felt like I was just checking the box. But after my twins were born, so a year into Modern Family, they were almost a year old, and I felt there was a lot of stresses on my marriage, and I had a lot of doubts about what I was doing, and I thought I'm supposed to quit this job, and I'm supposed to just take care of these kids, and I feel like I'm going further and further away from my husband, and that was threw me into the therapy that I'm still in with my therapist, who I've been with now for, how old are the kids? They're 12, so 11 years.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And we started with twice a week.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Oh, we went deep. We went real, real deep. And she's a full doctor, so she may have like an entire like garage full of cars that I bought her at this point. And I don't care because it worked. When you find somebody good, it works.
What does that mean? Like just, I mean, I know, and I think Jonathan knows, but for people listening, let's say, who are still kind of riding that resistance train about therapy. What does it mean when you find someone good, it works?
For me, good therapy, and I have to be careful the way I phrase it because I also realize how incredibly privileged I am that I didn't have to worry about a price tag. Or there was a time in New York when I had a therapist who was working with my insurance, with SAG insurance, and you have a certain number of sessions on plan before you start having to pay out of pocket. At the time, I was doing okay, but I wasn't doing so well that I could pay for therapy out of pocket. And I got a call one day from SAG. God bless. I hope they've changed the system. And they're like, hi, this is SAG Pension and Health. Are you suicidal? And I was like, excuse me? Is it your doctor said you're suicidal and that's why you need extra sessions? And I was like, and I went to her and I said, what the fuck? She said, oh no, you have to say that
right.
so that I can get you more sessions covered. And I was like, but do you realize they called me at home now? Like a lady, some chick just called and said, are you supposed to? So I recognize as a backdrop that I am incredibly privileged and I can doctor shop and I can pay out of pocket. Because what I have found is very valuable to me is to have a full doctor who understands brain chemistry and does talk therapy. And there are not a lot of those therapists out there. But for me, that combination was invaluable because, and still is, because I will ask her, I'll say, what is happening? Why do I not, I started having therapy narcolepsy, where we would get into a discussion and I would hear it and I was processing and then my chin was on my chest. I was slumped in sleep. Yeah. You have?
I have had this, yeah.
Mayim, I feel so much better. I joke about it, but it freaked me out when it happened.
It's very strange.
What do you think happens?
Mayim Bialik's Breakdown is supported by Squarespace.
From websites and online stores to marketing tools and analytics, Squarespace is the all-in-one platform to build a beautiful online presence and run your business. You love Squarespace.
My first website was built on Squarespace.
You
I was
love it.
Terrified. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was like, there's no way I could build a website. I'm not a designer. And guess what? I made a beautiful website and I'm still using it.
Because of Squarespace.
That's right.
Squarespace is everything to sell anything. They have the tools that you need to get your business off the ground, including, Jonathan, what do they include?
E-commerce templates, inventory management, a simple checkout process, and secure payments.
Whatever you sell, Squarespace has merchandising features to make your products look their best online. You can gain powerful insight into who's visiting your site and how they're interacting with your content. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, what do you do?
Go to squarespace.com/breakdown to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
For me, there's something called flooding, which is there is a neurochemical experience that happens when you're talking about, it's usually when you're talking about certain things or when associations are made. And what happens is for some brains, the response to that is to go night-night.
Right.
Like literally to go night. Sometimes I will just start yawning and yawning and she'll say,
God, yes.
I'm noticing that you're yawning a lot. And I'll be like, what? I'm just so tired all of a sudden. And sometimes it's also a combination of I rarely stop and sit down. So sitting for therapy is also like a big deal for me because I'm like a go, 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 go. So sometimes when I sit, I realize how tired I am. But it is almost always what you said. It's like all of a sudden the brain is like, it's too many chemicals about emotions. I'm going to power down.
And it's a defense mechanism, no?
I guess.
It's like a safety.
It's sure
well,
awkward.
I always felt like I had so many friends who have experienced trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And I always felt guilty spending as much time and having as much anxiety and spending as much time in therapy as I did. Because I was like, nobody did anything to me. And my current therapist said, death by 1,000 paper cuts is still
right.
death.
Yeah.
And that's when I knew that she owned my heart. Because I do feel this, I'm like, something has to happen to you. There has to be big trauma,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's called being a human, Julie Bowen.
Right, but anybody listening to this, you have money, you've got children, you have you're rich and white in America.
You're very pretty too.
Privileged can
you get?
Great
cheekbones, you're beautiful.
Thank you. And so what the hell do you have to talk about? And why do you wake up in the middle
but
of the night
me, that's,
feeling like something terrible has just happened?
But I think to me, that's what I hope is so comforting to people. That, you know, your mental wellness, your state of being comfortable existing as a human being is going to vary from person to person. Some people have a much easier time with it. I envy those people. Also, people who are dumb seem really happy a lot of the time.
So oh my God, I would love it. Narcissists, I didn't really understand until recently, really truly understand that they don't think anything about anybody else. And I'm like, oh, that sounds lovely.
No, but the experience of processing emotions and things that happen to you, memories, associations, everybody's brain is different. And also, I just want to say, like, the notion of normal, like, there's not really a normal. Of course, there's like a normal that, generally speaking, lets you roll through life mm-hmm. without, oh, you know, crippling anxiety, panic attacks,
right.
and depression, or mania that makes me stay up all night. But the notion that there's kind of a normal is really a misnomer. And I think exactly what you're saying, like, that blazer alone is stunning. And I'm thinking anyone with that blazer has no problems in life. But the fact is, like, we all have our human experience, you know?
Yeah, but every time I love podcasts. I love talking. I'm starting a podcast and I with your people And I love listening to podcasts, and I've been listening to Rich and Famous. Okay, no, sorry, Even the Rich, which sounds like a terrible name, but they talk about kind of how horrible things happen to really, they talk about Elizabeth Taylor, they do 7 episodes on like really like deep dive, like what was it like to be Elizabeth Taylor? And I just finished listening to Jessica Simpson, and it's, and in the end though, and I'm, spoiler alert, she was sexually abused as a child, not by her parents, by somebody else down the block. And I'm like, well, see, there's the thing you can point to, though. There it is. Like that, of course, that makes you XYZ. Of course you make choices, you know, that are bad because that horrible thing happened. So how do I measure up my, and do I want to measure up my 1,000 paper cuts against that? And why do I even merit the incredible therapy that I get and medication?
This notion of 1,000 cuts.
Death by 1,000
paper cuts.
Death by
1,000 cuts. I mean, there's a lot of research and thinking about developmental trauma that is more the micro trauma, the misalignment that we get as children from our caregivers, where children are designed to receive their needs and to get their needs met. And when there is a misalignment, it can be subtle, but that constant misalignment, and we can talk about, we all grew up in a different time where the children's needs weren't considered the way that they are now. And we can say that society has gone too far in the direction of catering to children's whims. But for the most part, we've all gone through some misalignment where we've had some sort of chronic overexposure to our needs not getting met. And that lasted over many, many years.
Well, and some people come in with a baseline that is depressed, meaning literally lower than, let's say, what is optimal. So it's not even like you're trying to create a trauma. It's just that some people are going to be more. This is why, this is one of my number one reason for not hitting your children. Some children, you can hit them indiscriminately whenever you'd like to or spank them.
Not that, and we're suggesting you should.
No, no, no. And those kids are like, whatever, I deserved it, or like, I'm fine. And other kids will be deeply, deeply affected by the fact that their caregiver caused them harm.
Yes.
And you don't know what kid you're going to get. And that's what I said. I have no idea what DNA system came out with my child. So I would rather not run the risk that I have super sensitive children who might get
impacted.
You have two
boys, right?
Two boys.
Right. And are they vastly different? Oh, see, I have 3 boys that I can't believe, if I had not seen them exit my vagina on my own, I'd be like, really? They are so
different.
And they need, in a perfect world, which it is not, they would each have a different mother.
Right.
Or I could mother each of them differently. But one of them, you have to put your face in his.
Yeah.
You have to, like, raise your voice.
Right.
You have to be like, you know, really get in there to make him hear you. And one of them, if I raise my voice at all, the tears come.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how did this happen? And they're very, very different people. But you're right. So the baseline that they come in with, it's like nature versus nurture. Nature all the way. Nature won that battle. But I have to kind of figure out how to parent these 3. And that's, I don't fault my parents for not, in a way, I think the 70s benign neglect helped because they had 3 very different daughters. And had they been, they probably weren't equipped to figure out how to be very different parents. But at the same time, I still would love to know why I wake up with the feeling of battery acid. Like I describe it as there's been a crash. That is the feeling that I wake up with, or all of a sudden will seize me in the middle of the day. And I'm like, there has been no crash. There's no, everyone is okay. But it feels like there's been a crash. And I don't know where it comes from.
That's why we keep going to therapy.
Yeah. It has pushed me to intense therapy. And I got desperate enough to get real woo-woo, and it's not woo-woo. I meditate, and it works. And I kind of hate that it works because it's right there. it's always right there.
What do you do? Do you do transcendental meditation? Do you just do guided meditations? What do you do?
I signed up for the transcendental meditation. Then they were like, well, you have to come on Tuesday, and you got to bring something white, and you have to bring a fresh flower. And I was like, I can't make it on Tuesday. They're like, then you can't come. I was like, wait, what? No, I literally sat down one day when experiencing so much anxiety. I was like, I'm desperate. I'll try anything. And I said, I'm just going to count my breaths. I'm going to count to 100 breaths. And I figured, how long does that take? I don't know, 5 minutes? I don't know. 25 minutes passed. And I was like, I opened my eyes, I looked at my watch, and I was like, holy shit, I'm like a fucking Dalai Lama. And I felt 10 degrees better. You know what I mean? Now, that doesn't always happen that way, but something does happen and something changes and shifts. And I only got to believe in it when I read in the New York Times, there was some Sunday thing in the Science Times about how meditation really, I needed to know the science of why it changes your brain before I was willing. Because otherwise I'm like, it's fucking woo-woo shit. I'm not going to light some incense and, you know, hope. That sounds like bullshit. But when I read about how it really works, I was like, okay, I'll do that.
Do you do that every day or do you try?
Hell no. I would love to lie and say I do. And if I really cared, I would. But I wait until I'm desperate.
How's that work?
It's great. It's great. Emergencies are nothing. You know, there are no atheists in foxholes. And that's me. Like, wait till I get desperate. And I'm like, oh my God, I'll do anything. I'll make a deal with the devil. I will now meditate.
A lot of us are living with that feeling that there is something horrible about to happen or has just happened, and we don't know what to do with it. And many of us are medicating it. Many of us are distracting ourselves. There's no real way to escape it, but we can shift it. And so that was awesome to hear. Thank you.
But and you guys know what the science is behind that brain, because I read it and promptly forgot it. My takeaway was the New York Times says this is real.
And I think also this is a great example of, for thousands of years, several traditions have been doing this without the New York Times to talk about it, with like, it is a way of life for many, many traditions. And even, you know, my personal tradition of Judaism, like Kabbalistic meditation was a large part of, yes, an elite section of Jewish practice, but it was the foundation for the prayer structure that we still do to this day. But what they used to do in 3 hours, we do in 20 minutes, right? Because there used to be breaths and motions and movement. Like, for thousands of years, many traditions have known this works, but it takes Western culture to be like, but where's the data? I need data points, bring it on, and then I'll do it.
And I need it from the New York Times.
Same.
Or a trusted source. I'm not going to hear it from, if it comes up at BuzzFeed or right. Whatever. I'm like, no, I have to know. And when I saw that it made, I think what it really was is also I'm getting older and, like, you know, my vision's gone. I'm wearing contacts right now. I can't see shit.
Right.
And, you know, you start to lose a name every now and again. You're like, God damn it. And that article said it helps keep your brain elastic and chewy and young. And
you
I was like,
are elastic, chewy, and young, Julie Bowen.
Yay! Okay.
Julie, it's been really, really a delight to get to know you. You know, I've seen you at red carpet events and, you know, obviously have followed your career. And as Big Bang Theory and Modern Family would, you know, often be at the same events together in those years. It's a pleasure to talk to you. This has been really awesome. It's been really awesome.
Well, you'll have to come and be on my podcast that I'm doing with a guy named Chad Sanders about quitting things.
Oh, I love it.
It's about what happens when you quit something that you thought was really, really fundamental to who you were as a person.
Yes! I got a PhD and then I walked away to raise my kids.
Oh my God. Mayim. I will never say Mayim again. I've always said Mayim. Why have you never corrected me before?
I don't, because you won the Emmy. I didn't want to say anything.
No.
I'd love to come on and talk to you about all the things that I quit.
They've quit. That would be great. I really, really have always loved your brain. I find it a little intimidating and scary. Well, because you're like, for real, you have like real degrees and shit. Like, you don't need this. You don't need Hollywood.
You don't know what I need.
You don't need this. But see, that's when my brain's like, God, if I had a PhD, I would just be charging $700 an hour and tell people what to do.
Thank you so much. Really, really a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
She is one of the only attractive people who I think I believe was a nerd. Like, when she started talking about going to Brown and, like, be, you know, like...
What makes you believe that she was a nerd?
Just the way that she was just talking, because it was kind of like, it was when Rainn Wilson was on and he was like, Charlize Theron, you weren't a nerd. Like, no
Jennifer
one believes
Aniston,
that.
Jennifer Aniston, you were not a nerd.
That's right.
You were not an outsider.
No, but there was something about, she's got a very quirky brain. She has a really cool lens. She's got a very funny, she's got a very persistent sense of humor for someone who's not a stand-up by trade.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, she's got a lot of cool expressions. Like, I just like how her brain works. And I'm kind of feeling like I get that she was academic-y, you know, she was school-y, and that she seems very focused on whatever it is that she's kind of like locked into, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of bought it that she was, you know, a cerebral type, which is not to say that pretty people can't be. I'm just saying that, like, when you see someone like that who's like, I was such a nerd, like, you know.
You were like, no, you weren't.
Like, did people push you to the floor just because you existed?
What was Rain's definition?
Rainn was like, if you don't get beat up every day.
Just,
like,
for existing.
And, like, people literally taking your lunch money. Like, that's a thing. I thought that her description of what, you know, kind of raising that baseline is what certain people's chemistry, quote, needs. If I told you, you know, you were, let's say, about to get pregnant, you need to take folic acid, you'd be like, I take folic acid. But when it comes to mental health, right, we have this totally separate distinction. And all of a sudden, everyone becomes, you know, a naturopathic, ethical purist who doesn't want big pharma interfering with their life.
It's true.
And I don't want a Prozac nation. That is not my goal. But if you are a person who is experiencing a level of anxiety, depression, panic that is interfering, like, properly, objectively, interfering.
I'm gonna pause you there, because
if people don't want to be around you, please take medicine. Sorry.
Or find better people. This is the problem when you say, is it interfering? Because usually it's a slow build. It's the frog in water scenario that's slowly getting heated up and we don't realize it. And we sort of
live. Jonathan, I bring this up because I'd like you to go on medication.
Look, I will be honest. I have considered at times in my life, should I be on medication?
Shocking.
And I'm like, I ask myself, what is a reasonable amount of anxiety to have? How anxious should I feel? Am I feeling an appropriate amount of anxiety? Am I not? Like, where am I in that graph that she articulated? Like, where am I? Am I below the line or am I above the line? And how often am I?
You're below the line.
Maybe it's a new internet poll. Is Jonathan above or below the line? People don't know me well enough. They don't know. I hide it.
Well, and I mean, we're making light of this, but legitimately, like, you know, part of me feels like in a sci-fi universe, you know, there'll be like a chip in us, which I don't want. But part of me is like, gosh, what if there was a way for us to know, like, a little bit of this could transform your existence, right?
It's not the chip in us, but I know that the technology is possible, that we, with regular, semi-regular check-ins, we could evaluate our overall emotional or psychological stress.
The company that you co-founded is literally, that is the future, right? In terms of saying, are there patterns that we can pick up even in people's speech?
That's right.
Right? And the answer is yes.
That's why I know it's possible.
Right, because artificial intelligence is a thing. But it's almost like you can only decide to change, you know, or shift when you decide it. But also it's often the people all around you that know that I'm not talking about you, although a little bit, but no. But like, yeah, sorry. It makes me feel frustrated because I know so many people who wait. They wait until it is so bad that they start isolating and alienating people and feeling hopeless. Hopeless.
So there was this, you know, large notion of the quantified self, a sort of a movement of quantified selfers. And it started with, you know, Fitbits, and it started with tracking our steps because we were like, oh, we had no idea how much exercise we're getting. In our time.
I couldn't figure out why I was so lazy and didn't lose weight. Oh, it's because I don't move.
So we started tracking our steps. Then we got smartwatches. Then we got Aura rings, which I have.
Right.
Then we got Whoop straps, which, you know, they gave us a Whoop strap.
Yeah.
And so we started to understand, oh, if I get better data on my sleep.
Right.
If I get better data on how much I move.
Or recovery, this big, you know, like, what's my recovery?
And
from,
then it, it tracks our heart rate, and then it's our HRV. And then we start.
What's HRV?
Heart rate variability. So all these metrics that we start to gather, and we're like, oh, if I get more information, I start to see a larger picture of my health and well-being. We don't have any of that for our emotional well-being.
Right.
And that's where if we could get objective...
I could put everyone on medication, then they wouldn't bother me anymore.
Well, we would be able to
I'm kidding.
We know you're kidding. But we would be able to say, before someone starts to isolate the way they are, hold on, something is going on with this person. Or we could say, hey, Mayim, your like stress level, which you, you know, for valid reason, might be sort of peaking and staying there at a level that could be harmful for you.
Also, you know, where do we take this? We take this to the point of people becoming so hopeless and desperate that they start thinking about suicide or not existing. And, you know, I also, I wonder if that's, you know, a place that we can start tapping into also to try and get people help, you know, before it literally is too late. And it's something that when we, you know, talked with specialists in suicide prevention, things like that, it's one of the things they talk about. We need to find out before it becomes critical what people need. And that shouldn't be true only if we're talking about suicide, God forbid. You know, it should be like that with our mental health. It gets me very fired up. It makes me want the government to do something.
It can't be only about suicide. It has to be about us living in a way that is healthy and allowing us to thrive, not just sort of
survive
and keeping our heads above water and waking up feeling like there's battery acid
in our face.
The last thing, let's end on something a little bit more fun. As mentioned, this is our first episode back together in the new year. You went off and did your own thing for a little bit. Someone else sat in my chair, which is really, we have to discuss that. And, you know, we'll take our own time off camera to unpack that. Do you have any moments of revelation for us? Anything that you've been working on in the new year? Any insight that you've had?
Moments of peace and calm, Mayim realizes something.
Since this is our first episode together back.
Back together.
Together again, still. Maybe always, for sure. I will say that there's a real ease to being alone, you know, just like sitting here and like I had to do some ads, you know, alone. And, you know, when you're alone, you don't have to think about anybody else. You don't have to worry, you know, are they going to do their lines right? And, you know, do they have different pacing than you and do stuff whenever you want? You know, I didn't have to worry about your schedule when I did that. Someone on our team may have even commented that I seem to be much more relaxed and in a better mood. I don't know. And
team member, I'd like to know who you are.
And then what I also realized is that there are certain things you can't do alone.
It's harder to make jokes by yourself.
It's harder to be interrupted by people who can't leave a tender moment alone. It is hard to make jokes when you're by yourself. It is hard to have your reality reflected back to you when you're by yourself. It's hard to have someone keep you honest because we often can't keep ourselves honest. There are certain things that happen in partnership that just don't happen alone. And it was also interesting to reflect on because, you know, I'm a person who's kind of had a boyfriend, for example, from the time I'm like 16, you know, really kind of pretty much straight through to like being married. And then I've been divorced. And so like I've had a lot of time to be someone's partner, someone's helper, someone's mom, you know, and being divorced, I've, you know, gotten a lot of time by myself. So I've really gotten to have, you know, that interplay and really kind of play with that. But I think it really is an interesting moment that's a little bit the struggle of introverts. You know, there are so many things I enjoy about being alone. There are so many things that are more convenient, easier, and also it can be lonely. You know, it can be lonely. So I'm very glad you're back. Now he makes a joke because it's too intimate.
I'm glad I'm back, making your life more difficult, but also reflecting your reality. So maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. know. I kind of heard a mixed bag, but I'm going to take it nonetheless.
Make sure to go to Bialik Breakdown for more information. We have merch. It's super exciting. We've been wearing it. Other people have been reporting that our sweatshirts are the most comfortable sweatshirts they've ever been in. Someone literally has said that, and she keeps wearing it, and she sends me a picture when she wears it.
If you aren't already subscribed to the show, subscribe.
Subscribe, like, leave comments. Help us keep doing what we're doing in 2022. I think that's it.
Check out the Instagram page, at Bialik Breakdown.
Follow us. We hit 50,000 followers. That was really exciting.
And there is some exclusive content that will be on there, being released there.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of new fun things in 2022. We're going to get even better breaking things down. From our breakdown to the one we hope you never have, we'll see you next time.
It's Maya Bialik's Breakdown. She's going to break it down for you. She's got a neuroscience PhD or two. One fiction, one fact. And now she's going to break down. It's a breakdown. She's going to break it down.